Australia's Highway 1 loops our continent over more than 14,000 kilometres. It's the longest of its kind in the world, longer even than the Trans-Siberian Highway. This year, journalist James Woodford is travelling from Ingham in North Queensland to Victoria for an upcoming background briefing story. From safety to cemeteries, James' experiences shine a light on the beautiful but ageing, increasingly dangerous stretch of bitumen. James, welcome to Summer Breakfast.
G'day, John. How's it going?
Not too bad. Now, why do you describe Highway 1 as a 3,000-kilometre-long cemetery?
Look, I think, you know, all of us who travel along the highway, we've all seen those memorials on the roadside. But I think when you're actually do something like what I've set out to do for background briefing and actually have a look at the highway, and you're looking for all of those memorials, you just see them. They're just way, way, way too frequent along that highway. And it does sound a little bit melodramatic, but it really does strike you as being a 3,000-kilometre-long cemetery when you're actually driving along it.
What did you notice about the Bruce Highway, for example, in northern Queensland, in terms of, say, mining traffic?
Yeah, that was actually really surprising to me. One of the motivations for doing this trip was that I did exactly the same trip last year, and I was really struck on the Bruce Highway around that Gladstone, Rockhampton area last year, just how much mining traffic there was. But then this year, doing the trip again, I've noticed actually New South Wales had masses of mining traffic as well. So, but the thing about the Bruce Highway is just how primitive it is. You know, when you think of it as a national highway, there are just so few rest areas, so few overtaking lanes, so few verge areas. It's just a very inhospitable, dangerous road. And you know, we talk to truck drivers at rest areas, there'd be many of them would actually say to us, there is no way I would actually want to work up on the Bruce Highway. It's just too dangerous.
Joining us as well to talk about safety on North Queensland's twin lane highway, that is the Bruce, is Noel Lang. Noel is Vice Chairman of Local Road Accident Action Group, RAG, and has 16 years' experience as a senior crash investigator with Queensland. Noel, welcome to you also.
Good morning, John. How are you going, James?
Very well, thanks, Noel.
Now, is there a lack of rest stops between Mackay and Gladstone, as James has pointed out, Noel?
Oh, look, I think realistically there's a lack of rest stops throughout the whole of Queensland. It's very unfortunate that we have a road infrastructure system that doesn't allow for particularly heavy vehicle drivers to comply with their legislation, number one. And number two is with the vast distances we have in Queensland, people are just not educated well enough to realise the signs and symptoms of fatigue.
Well, indeed. So you're suggesting that fatigue is the main cause of accidents?
It's not necessarily the main cause. As you alluded, I was previously with the Queensland Police Service and I was a senior investigator. When we look at crashes, there's three areas you look at: either the vehicle, the driver, or the road condition.
Yep.
So when you bring into these three, road condition is such that it's got to be able to accommodate people who may just run off the verge of a road or things like that. But when they're trying to travel distances and they're travelling from Brisbane to Cairns, you know, it's 12 hours up to Mackay, and then they try and push on to Townsville or doing the vice versa when they're coming back from Cairns, it's 8.5 hours, 9 hours to Mackay, and then they try and get to Rockhampton, which is another 3 hours. So they just push themselves vast distances, and they're not utilising available stops, town centres. This is motorist. But heavy vehicle drivers, unfortunately, they can't stop in city areas. They can't. There's certain rest areas they're not allowed to stop at, and because of the size of the loads and the nature they need to do, they need designated places to be able to rest.
Now, the signs of fatigue you were talking about, we'd call these micro-sleeps, wouldn't we?
Look, micro-sleep is really the end result. When people start getting tired behind the wheel of a car, they start simple things like yawning, becoming fidgety, they get the sore eyes, things like that. They're the telltale signs that it's time to bloody well pull over.
Yeah.
And they're just ignoring that stuff. In realist term, like I do a lot of presentations on fatigue, and one of the things we allude to is, well, I call it the silent killer, because even though it's part of our fatal four or our fatal five, people can be driving along the road, have a police car behind them, they'd be yawning, they'd be doing all the things that they know is fatigue, and yet they don't believe they're committing an offence, because there's no in-point legislation that says one shall not drive fatigued.
Gee, it'd be very hard for a for a patrol officer to be able to recognise someone as being fatigued, wouldn't it?
Exactly right. And this is why we need people in our society to start taking some responsibility.
Now, the federal government had a large campaign, didn't they, against fatigue? Dr. Carl Krasniski might have been the face of this campaign.
Yes, that is right. They did quite a lot of advertising over the past, and it was all good, positive advertising. But the realism is cars are far more comfortable. The roads are getting better, although I do agree with James that the Highway 1 is still a death trap in many areas. But drivers still just don't acknowledge, and particularly, unfortunately, young drivers, or we get a lot of foreign drivers who come to this straight and don't realise the distances.
Well, that's very true. It can be quite intimidating for people from overseas when they do realise the vast distances involved. Can we just look at the trucking industry to begin with just for a moment, Noel? Are there still unrealistic expectation and pressures put upon drivers to get to a certain place by a certain time, unrealistically?
Look, I think that's a part of business where companies get into contractual arrangements that, you know, a product or a load will be moved from A to B, and it's meant to be at a particular destination within a time. But having said that, though, there is quite good legislation around there. It's one in Queensland is called the Chain of Responsibility. It effectively involves everyone from the person who consigns the load to the transport company, you know, to the delivery point. That they're all involved in making sure that load reaches its destination within the bounds of legislation. The unfortunate part is when a driver travels their 5 hours, they've got to pull up for 30 minutes, they don't necessarily have a suitable location to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yes, I understand. Just to generally then, Noel, is the the statistics telling us the situation is getting better or worse?
Look, in different areas, the statistics tell us different stories, right? Just for an example, don't absolutely quote me on these statistics. The average throughout Queensland for fatigue-related crashes is about 18% when I last looked at them. Within the central police region, which encompasses Rockhampton right through to Mackay and everything out west of Longreach here, the fatigue-related incidents are up around 36%. But that's because we've got a big area of mining. We've got a lot of people who travel as part of that, and it does culminate into a problem.
Yeah. Noel, look, thanks for joining us this morning. I'd just like to return to you, James, for a moment, if that's all right.
Yeah.
After North Queensland, how did Highway 1 change?
Look, it changes a lot when you come into, you start to approach Brisbane and then through the Gold Coast. But then what is really striking about Highway 1 is how it so quickly deteriorates back into something that just doesn't seem to be appropriate for a national highway. So you go through those northern rivers towns like Urunga, Maxville, Ulmarra, Nambucca Heads, and you have these places where you've got houses just metres away from the road. And it's another week until it's the year anniversary since the child was killed at Urunga. And I think what is really striking when you talk to people who live beside the road is just how often people tear up. There's a woman that I interviewed at Ulmarra, and she's lived for 30 years on a bend in the highway right in town. And every night when she puts her three children to bed, she feels like she's playing Russian roulette with her life and her children's lives, and she's been trying for years and years to get something done about that particular spot, and no one is listening. And that's in spite of having a truck actually come through her fence, hit the wall of her house. And there's this sense of anger at the state of the road.
Now, when do you complete your journey?
Look, I'm still looking around down here on the New South Wales South Coast, but I'm planning to push through to Victoria over the next week or so. There's some people I want to interview further south. And, you know, even down here at the moment, you can see the strain that's on the road as holidaymakers are trying to get around.
Well, I look forward to the report on Background Briefing. In the meantime, we've been joined by journalist James Woodford, and we were joined as well by the vice chairman of the local road accident group, RAG, in North Queensland. Indeed, that was Noel Lang. I apologise for that.